Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on dead men's secrets right after this. Well, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, you know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. They tell us, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin, a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away. And then in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. And in place of these just weights and balances, these two presidents have introduced our current practice of the first, the second, and the fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they've given us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coin. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that we teach here in our business school, conducted twice a year here at the law school. If you'd like to learn more, call and order our free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. It's a commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email, send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, last time we talked about art and medicine, and I said we'd take a look at mechanical devices, everyday items, and clothing in ancient times. What are some of these everyday items and mechanical devices? Well, on Malta, there are vestiges of what appear to be a railroad, but it is thousands of years old. Grooves for the rails and cross ties run beside a narrow strip of rock where no animals pulling a cart could pass. Neither are there any traces of footsteps or hoof marks. The track, cut into the rock, features sidings and junctions, just like a modern railway today. At one point, the track leaves the land and disappears underwater for some distance. It's mysterious. No less intriguing was the robot rooster that screamed. Is it possible that ancient man possessed machines? Well, it's not only possible, it's true. In Greece, steam boilers. In Greece, steam-powered organs. In Egypt, a two-cylinder steam engine, which embodied the principles of both the turbine and jet propulsion. In Ecuador, numerous woven copper items which bear a resemblance to the modern automobile radiator. Whatever their use, their design indicates a sophisticated understanding of a heat exchange technology. Greece, petrol vapor machines. Egypt, a speedometer registering the distance traveled by a vehicle. If it were not for the repeated burnings of the Alexandrian Library, what stories might we have found concerning motor cars? In the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico, the so-called Castillo of Chichen Itza was recorded to be very ancient, to a very ancient tradition, built over a machine of similar form, capable of traveling over great distances and for very long times. In Alexandria, Egypt, jet engines. In Tlalelaco, Tlalaco, Mexico, I guess that is, found 20 feet underground an object which looks like a miniature jet engine. In Ecuador, copper gears with a hardness comparable to steel, indicating that they were designed for heavy mechanical use. Ecuador, copper and stone mechanical devices with circular rollers bearing an uncanny resemblance to modern metal fabricating machines. In Greece, a machine tool for cutting screws. In Greece, a machine for boring tunnels. In Egypt, drills for boring into granite rock that turned 500 times faster than modern power drills. In Turkey, drills that bored holes finer than the thinnest needle in hard stone. In Mexico, a 5-ton steamroller for road maintenance. In Egypt, a fire engine with a double-action pump. In Greece, screw pumps, an ingenious interacting system of levers, pulleys, and grips for lifting great weights, one use of which was to grab, tilt, and sink enemy ships. In France, a sculptured block discovered among Roman remains showing a multiple harvester used in reaping grain. In Panama, a stylized model of an ancient geared earth-moving machine, and it contains a system of mechanical gears, including cogwheels on an axle, with a rocker arm between them, with two more rocker arms in the rear, and a jaguar mouth, with teeth-like bucket grabs. The spade-like features on the side and rear are very obvious. If this is a prehistoric model of a real working vehicle, it would explain some of the construction triumphs of the ancient Americas. In Ecuador was found mechanical corn mills, wheeled and geared. In Peru, stone engravings show people operating unknown machines. In Crete, remains of puzzling apparatuses have been found in the palaces and workshops of Knossos. In Peru, a clay vessel portrays a man using the index fingers of both hands to operate a kind of calculating machine or a switchboard. In Crete, the Phaistos, spelled Phaistos, I presume that's Phaistos disc discovered in 1908, shows evidence of having been printed using movable type. Recurring symbols impressed individually. This shows the principle of the printing of type, or printing by type, was known in very early times. Evidence as to whether it was ever used on paper and other materials is probably lost forever. Ancient mounds in Michigan and the United States have likewise yielded objects which appear to have been impressed with dies or type pieces. Now, here's one that was accidentally found in 1885 when a block of coal was broken open in the Austrian foundry of Isidor Braun of Vaklabruck. Braun's son took the mysterious cube to the Salzburg Museum, where it underwent examination by the Austrian physicist Karl Gurls, spelled G-U-R-L-S. Now, Derek D. Sola Price's reconstruction of a calendar computer built by the Greeks about 65 BC and found by sponge divers off the island of Antikythera, Antikythera, I guess that is. Now, going back here to the object found in the coal, the object was clearly machine fabricated with smooth, sharp surfaces. Four of its sides were flat, and the two remaining sides opposite each other were convex. A deep, even groove ran completely around it. It remained on exhibit at the museum until 1910. An account of its discovery was published in the scientific journals Nature in London in 1886 and La Astronomie, Paris in 1897. It is of antediluvial origin, and it is apparently a piece of some machine destroyed and buried during the Great Flood. Then there is in the United States, England, Germany, Russia, Italy, and France, similar objects with interesting angles that have been discovered elsewhere. In China and Peru, a seismograph providing data to pinpoint the epicenter of an earthquake anywhere in the world. The application of scientific principles here implied postulates a knowledge of the Earth's structure and of the propagation of waves. In Egypt, 2nd century AD, Athens, Greece, coin slot machines for holy water, the quantity depending on the coin inserted. Egypt. An automaton in the form of a clock was discovered after the Muslim conquest of Egypt by one of the first caliphs of Cairo and described in an Arab manuscript known as the Mirtadi. It was made of red gold and covered with precious stones with two shiny gems for eyes. The cock, when approached, uttered a frightening cry and began flapping its wings. Now these are machines, boys and girls, and in the section here on, let me find this again over here, Mechanical Devices, number 17. That's chapter 17. There are 42 of these, beginning on page 219. All of these residues of automation in the past, or in a past technological era, I should qualified that not all scientific achievements of the past were a legacy from before the flood. There were natural social factors, of course. However, some achievements of early history and prehistory cannot be defined as creation of man's mind at that time because economic and social conditions were not ripe for them. They would have to be an inheritance from an earlier period. A mechanical effect of stunning beauty may soon be discovered in the Linqing district of China. Here, where China's earliest emperors lived and died, widespread excavations are presently being undertaken. The most staggering finds are yet to be made. Hidden beneath the picturesque landscape lie hundreds of undisturbed imperial tombs, which are filled with art treasures and riches. In 100 BC, the Chinese chronicler Sima Qin, C-H-I-E-N, I guess that's Qin, described unbelievable treasures constructed within the tomb of the first emperor, Qin Shi Huang. T constellations, regions of the earth, and contemporary buildings were all reproduced. All the rivers of the country, the Yellow River and the Yangtze, were reproduced in quicksilver and made to flow into a miniature ocean through some mechanical means. The location is known. The tomb under a mound overgrown with trees and wildflowers towers 165 feet, that's 16 stories high, against the northern foothills of Mount Li in the Wei River Valley of Kansu Province. The archaeologists who finally penetrate this tomb had better take care. The ancient chronicler warned that weaponry was set up, so that any robber breaking in would be killed. Now, let's take a look at everyday items. Could photographic and listening devices have been known and used in the very distant past? Sounds like an outrageous suggestion, surely. So let me introduce you to some Indian records dating to the second millennium BC and considered to be copies of still older documents, whereas the writings of most other nations suffered willful destruction. These have, by some miracle, survived. I might point out here that two huge museums, one in Alexandria, Egypt, with more than a million volumes, was destroyed by Julius Caesar. They burned it. The Romans were great destroyers. They were the engines of destructions, not of civilization. In Carthage, there was a second library reported to have more than 500,000 volumes, which was also destroyed by the Romans. They present epics of gods and men interspersed with such wealth of a scientific nature that much of it was considered absurd when translated in the last century. Modern science is today catching up with many of the concepts expressed in these documents. Scientists in many countries are now studying a remarkable translation made by Maharishi Bharadwaja. I'll spell that for you in case you want to check me out. And it's spelled Maharishi. Is the first name, I can pronounce that one, but the second one is Bharadwaja, and it's called Aeronautics, described as a manuscript from the prehistoric past. It contains fascinating, almost incredible data. The translation has been published by the International Academy of Sanskrit Research in Mysore, India. Its table of contents includes the secret of constructing airplanes, which will not break, which cannot be cut, will not catch fire, and cannot be destroyed. The secret of making planes motionless, the secret of hearing conversations and other sounds in enemy planes, and the secret of receiving photographs of the interior of enemy planes, and more. Take merely the photographic and audio references in this ancient document. Impossible questions arise, unless we are prepared to understand that there must have been a higher culture and technology, or an equally perfect technology before our own. Many isolated clues from around the world, inconsequential in themselves, but cumulatively meaningful, show that everyday items familiar to us today were known and used throughout the prehistoric world. Significantly, these are found in the ruins of inferior civilizations after the superior technology had long vanished. They are suggestive of what must have preceded them. So here are some of the more modest inventions, but nonetheless surprising to us, that can be found in the minor pages of archaeology. Egypt, 2750 BC. Envelopes were used for letters and sealed with the sender's private seal. Egypt, 2500 BC. 11 rusted razor blades with hieroglyphic writing on them. I might pause here to point out that in the Bible, when the story of Joseph was told, Joseph shaved before he went in to see Pharaoh. In Babylon, the sulfur matches. In Thera, 1500 BC. Boxing gloves. In India, thimbles. In Egypt, 2700 BC, Ur of Chaldea. Costa Rica to Colombia, silver and gold foil. In Ecuador, a plaque depicts a clerk writing with a quill pen in a surprisingly modern book. In general, evidence for paper books has been found on all continents except Australia. In Peru, books and paintings and hieroglyphics. Of course, this refutes the conventional assumption that writing was unknown in South America. In Guatemala and Egypt, books made of gold leaves. In Syria, 1400 BC, several rooms in one library were devoted entirely to just dictionaries and lexicons. In Egypt, China, and India, technological textbooks. In Turkey, rulers and compasses were used when making elaborate drawings for frescoes. In Armenia, 2500 BC, metallic paint. Metallic paint, unknown until recent times. Egypt, 3000 BC, a segmented box similar to that used today for cutlery. Egypt, camping equipment. Guatemala, diving suits. In Egypt, plastics, glass which could be bent and yet not broken, was reported by the Arab historian Ibn Abd Hoq, spelled I-B-N, A-B-D, H-O-K-H, to have been buried in ancient vaults. Peru, plastics, small tubes of a material like glass, but not glass, and of an unknown chemical composition were found in graves in the 1940s. In Turkey, drinking straws. In Egypt, 3000 BC, southern Turkey and Central America, forks and spoons. In Chaldea, knives of 2.8% tin. In India, aluminum cups. In Bolivia, England, Chaldea, Mexico, and Peru, finely executed gold dinnerware. In Crete, glazed dinnerware and tinted glass goblets. In Rome, thermos containers keeping liquids and foods either hot or cold were in common use. In Turkey, furniture decorated with gold and silver, bronze legs and tables and beds shaped like goat's feet or horses' hooves. In Israel, 850 BC, beds and ornaments of color stained ivory. In Ecuador, a magnificent golden bed inscribed with hieroglyphics. In Israel, chairs of ebony inlaid with ivory and lapis lazuli. I don't know what a lapis lazuli is. That's spelled L-A-P-I-S, L-A-Z-U-L-I. In Sumeria, 3000 B.C., and in Ecuador, modern quality musical instruments in great variety. In Syria, a musical notation on a 3,400-year-old clay tablet. When translated and played, it sounds very pleasing to the modern Western ear. Not unlike guitar music, it was probably written for a harp-accompanied soloist. And in Arizona and the Maya, and in Mexico, the Maya in Mexico, they found rubber balls. Now, there are 39 common items that we take for granted today as being very modern. These are called everyday items. These modern everyday items were known as far back as 3,000 years ago. Let me take one more. Clothing and adornment. Soak up the sun in your bikini or try on your pantsuit and wig and then off to a fashion parade. If 20th century historians called you primitive because you live thousands of years B.C., then you can smile. Your jewelry is immaculate. You lack nothing in sophistication. Neither does your prehistoric husband live in a cave. He wears well-styled clothes and modern shoes, enough to give the traditional prehistorian a seizure. Now here's a short checklist. In the Gobi Desert, in Nevada, in the United States, and in England, has been found fossilized prehistoric shoe prints with nail heads around the edge as well as shoelaces. In Mexico, Peru, and Germany, gold and silver footwear with soft gold soles or rubber soles, gold embellished. In Egypt and Borneo, finely woven textiles of extraordinary strength and delicacy, such as could only be produced in highly specialized factories today. In Peru and Mexico, cotton grown in various colors, from brown to blue, a technique which modern science has been unable to reproduce so far. In Peru, advanced dyeing techniques, fabrics covered with a mosaic of feathers in no less than 190 shades of color. Peru, magnificent textiles with veils, brocades, and gobelins for finer or far finer than is possible on any modern loom today. Russia, 3000 B.C., spindle whorls and patterned fabric designs. Peru, exquisitely patterned lace. Peru, clothing sewn artistically in multicolored designs with gold and silver thread. China, jade clothes composed of hundreds of pieces of tightly fitted jade particles sewn with golden thread. Mexico, waterproof clothing. China, modern jackets and long trousers depicted in underground tunnel paintings. South Africa, short-sleeved pullovers, closely fitting breeches, gloves, garters, and slippers, and multicolored shirts. Russia, fur trousers, embroidered shirts, jackets with ivory badges and clasps. In Russia, two-piece suits, styled very much as in the present day. In Crete, Asia Minor, and Egypt, all dated to 3000 BC, fashions were launched by the elegant women of Crete and imitated by other countries, such as very long skirts with flounces, full skirts with flounces, bodices, whatever a B-O-D-I-C-E-S is, decorated with medici-like collars. That's a M-E-D-I-C-I hyphen L-I-K-E collars. I imagine this is some kind of a clothing item that you ladies might recognize. Deeply cut in front, leaving the breasts visible. Hats of extravagance and variety. In France, pantsuits, short-sleeved jackets, decorated hats, small boots, and modern-looking purses. In Sicily, bikinis, modeled by skinny young girls posing in a mode similar to that of today. In Samaria, 2900 BC, an amazingly modern wig. In Thera Sumeria, T-H-E-R-A, Sumeria, eyelid paint and eye makeup. In Egypt, a woman preserved in a tomb was wearing five shades of lipstick. Her hair had been in rollers, and the curls were still in after 3,000 years. In Bulgaria, large earrings, necklaces, and cosmetics and expensive jewelry used with sophistication. In Mohenjo-Daro, Pakistan, 3000 BC, jewels, rings, bracelets, and necklaces of gold, silver, and ivory, kept in elegant silver caskets, and so well finished and so highly polished that it might have come out of a Bond Street jeweler's today. So much for a sampling of ancient fashions. Among the general populace, we see astonishing variety and opulence in clothing, also elegance in which good taste and coordination among clothes, hairdos, headwear, and jewelry prevailed. Beauty, sophistication matching our own, herbal drops were used to enlarge the pupils of the eyes, green eyeshadow, black eyeliner, face powder, and rouge were all used in great quantities, as was a bleaching paste for freckles. And from the earliest times, nails held a fascination. Manicuring implements were used, including a cuticle pusher, rather like an orange wood stick of today. Women colored their fingernails and toenails bright red. In taste, people were basically the same as today. And now there is, let me get this one, mechanical devices, everyday items, and clothing. And this has all been dug up. There are 969 records of these kinds of items. Some of these are on display in some museums, some of them are not. The author reports that most of this material is in packing crates in warehouses that museums all across the world refuse to put out on display because they refute or seriously put in danger the theory of evolution, which is our modern fairy tale that tells us long, long ago and far, far away. All right, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals but by pre-arrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give out do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the book Dead Men's Secrets. I rate this about a 1 in 100 book. I'm an old man. I have never seen another book like it. I have read about some of these stories. I have seen pictures of the light bulbs that are depicted on the hieroglyphic murals in the tombs of Egypt. I have seen pictures of the Nazca animals. I have heard of and seen pictures of these huge buildings, these huge building blocks and rocks in Peru and Ecuador. Just little pieces here and there, you know, that I've read in Discover Magazine or Reader's Digest or some TV special or something like that. You probably have also. This author, Jonathan Gray, has put together a record of 969 records. The book is about 350 pages, paperback, published in 2004. It's called Dead Men's Secrets, Jonathan Gray. If only 10% of them are true, accurate, and correct, it's a blockbuster. I'm telling you, boys and girls, that if 10%, which would be about 100, 96.9, then all the rest of them were lies, you'd still be faced with an insurmountable problem concerning evolution. Where in the hell does this technology come from? We can't duplicate it today. Now, boys and girls, when there's something that I cannot do, it doesn't mean jack diddly squat. I remember years ago I was flying back from Alaska. And I stopped for fuel at a SeaTac airport there in Seattle, Tacoma, they call it, SeaTac. It was in the late 60s or early 70s. My guess would be it was probably about 1972, because I flew up to Alaska on that trip in a Cherokee 6. And there was a 747 coming in for a landing, and I'd never seen one before. No, I'd heard of them, you know, I'd seen pictures of them, but I'd never seen a real 747. And I was sitting on the tarmac out at the end of the runway, running up the engines and doing my checkouts, and I looked up from the instrument panel, and I watched this humongous thingy suspended in the sky. It was moving very slowly. It was coming in for a landing. I stopped what I was doing because I couldn't believe what I was seeing with my own eyeballs. And I watched in absolute fascination. Boys and girls, I've been a pilot for years. I watched that 747 come in and land, and I said, my God, how can that thing fly? How can that thing fly that slow? You know, the faster you run something through the air, the better it'll fly. I was absolutely amazed. And we're in modern times. Now, I showed you here that we have pictures and drawings. We have actual artifacts of jet engines from ancient times. I'm not surprised, after having seen this book, after having seen the pictures that are contained in the books, or in the pages of this book, that this kind of technology was possible. Put it to the test. Let's think about it for a minute. 500 years ago, we were pretty primitive people. You go back to the Middle Ages and Columbus discovering America. You know, these people don't have electric lights. They don't have batteries. They don't have rubber. They don't have plastic. Now, we go out here and we take a look around us today. We have plastic. We have rubber. We have metallurgy. And, you know, we accept it. You couldn't have a 747 without metallurgy. You've got to be able to combine various metals together in order to build an airplane like that. And yet we have those kinds of metallurgical samples today that came from ancient times. In the Bible, in Genesis 4, it says they were artificers in brass and iron. That's an indication of metallurgy. Now we come to anthropology. They run around and they're digging up these artifacts. An aluminum cup. Do you remember that statement? There was an aluminum cup. My God, boys and girls, aluminum wasn't discovered until the 20th century. I mean, yeah, we knew that there was a mineral called aluminum. But this aluminum, you know, to make aluminum metal, that's only been discovered in the last 100 years. For somebody to have an aluminum cup that goes back into ancient times, it's like digging up a computer, for crying out loud, with microwave software or Microsoft software. That's unheard of. Now, there are sophisticated mechanical devices here that I told you about today. Let's take a look at another one. Flight. Airplanes. Flight. Now, when you take a look at flight, the first guy that got up off the ground was a Frenchman who, I need to turn to page 277. Here's what I'm kind of stalling around for. A Frenchman discovers a hot air balloon back around 1700, on round numbers. Then from that first primitive flight in 1700, let's just come up 200 years, 1900. Let's go back before the flood. People are living 300, 400, 500, 600, 700 years. We discover a hot air balloon. Do you think that those people living those lengths of lifespans over there could have come up with an airplane? If today, in modern times, I'm just going back 300-400 years, modern times, 1700 to 1800 to 1900 to 2000, 17, 18, 19, 20, 300 years. That's not a stretch of imagination at all. In fact, I'd be surprised if they hadn't done it. Just think about it for a minute. Now, here's a secret called flight. So you thought that manned flight began with the Wright brothers back in 1903. Would you be surprised? Would you believe that flying machines could cross the oceans and cover the vast distances between continents in the earliest times BC? Well, listen to this. People all over the world have retained separate memories of a period when aviation was a well-known concept and flight was a frequent occurrence. And what's more, their writings demonstrate a knowledge of aerodynamics and an awareness of the factors of takeoff, propulsion, braking, and landing. But first, I would like to draw your attention to some giant drawings found all over the world. And the question is, why are there so many of these designed to be seen only from above? So we take a look at petroglyphs made to be seen from the air. In England, the Long Man of Wilmington, Sussex, is a human outline, 226 feet long, formed by an immense ditch. The figure can be seen solely from above, and even then, one has to be high up. In England, the Gog and Magog giants on hills near Cambridge are of such dimensions as to suggest that their construction was controlled from the air. In England, there is a 360-foot-long white horse at Uffington in Berkshire Downs. In England, the famous CERNE, CERN Abbas giant, a 180-foot human figure, is outlined by chalk trenches on a Dorset hillside. In England, the great zodiac of Glastonbury was a huge stone calendar laid out in a circle 30 miles in circumference and apparently meant to be seen from above. In Wisconsin, in the United States, then there are the elephant and serpent mounds in Wisconsin, California, the Mojave Maze in Ohio, the great serpent mound of Bush Creek over 1,300 feet long. Its open jaws are 60 feet. In California, the horse 40 feet long, the giantess 87 feet high, and the giant 96 feet tall, all three at Bly, California. Arizona, the 150-foot tall giant at Sacaton, S-A-C-A-T-O-N. And in Louisiana, six enormous octagons with a total length of 11.2 miles near Poverty Point. Now, like the Nazca spider and monkey and so on, these can only be seen from the air. Why would you make something that you can't even recognize on the ground? How would you make it unless you had been in the air to direct its construction? These are all sights. They're all there. They're all physical. They've been seen, weighed, touched, tasted, smelled, felt, photographed, documented. How come you and I never heard of them? I never heard of these things. You know, just taking a look here at the California. They say here, there's this California here, Bly, California, the horse 40 feet long, a giantess 87 feet high, and a giant 96 feet long, tall. Never heard of such a thing. I've never heard of that. Now, there's a stylized figure of a man 330 feet long in Chile. There are said to be many other sites of the Nazca kind in Peru and Chile. Now, I've heard of the Nazca site, but I never heard that there were more of them. Now, that doesn't mean that I know everything. You know, I'm always learning something new. That's why I kind of like my job, because nearly every day Dirk comes in here and hands me some report. It can be some economic report that's modern. It can be some book. It can be some story that came from the four corners of the world someplace on China or someplace. I reported to you the other day, did you know that there were pyramids larger than the Pyramid of Cheops? Now, I've been told all my life that great pyramid is the biggest building, the biggest pyramid in the world. Come to find out that there's four or five more pyramids bigger than that one in China, for crying out loud. I didn't know that. Now I've reported it to you, and the reason that I did that was because there's 969 of these reports. I said that if all of them were false except 10% of them, it would knock the theory of evolution right square in the head. And I don't have any reason to doubt that any of them are here. He has followed this up with footnotes. I mean, if you want to go take a look at the site, the document, the exhibit, you know, the maps are in here. The locations and the sites are there. You know, if you want to jump on a plane, run over to Britain, walk into the British Museum, the batteries are there. Now, I've known about that one for a long time. Now, not every single one of these is hidden away someplace. Many of these are out on display, which then leads me to ask the question, why aren't they all out on display? I mean, at least the pictures of them. Why don't we have more books than this, you know, that have pictures in our colleges and high schools and universities that say, hey, listen, you know, if you think that men were dumb and that they were dragging their knuckles on the back of the ground here a few thousand years ago, you know, clean up your act, start thinking straight. That wasn't the case. It may well be true that there were people walking around with their knuckles dragging on the ground like they are in Stone Age societies, the Aborigines in Australia, the Stone Age cannibals of Indonesia. That's true, no doubt about it. But contemporaneous with them, there are space age men living, firing rockets off to the space station, for crying out loud. How come we're not told about that? It's been going on for a long time. Let's take a look at flight. Sumerian cylinder seals show great numbers of machines flying in the sky, as matter-of-factly as if it were a daily occurrence. British Isles, Druid legends speak of magical machines capable of traveling on land, sea, and air. The Celts in Britain, Bran's chariot did not touch the water. Celts, Mannanan's flying machine took him from Ireland to England by night. Druid tradition in Britain, Abaris of Britain traveling through the air to Greece with the aid of a golden arrow. Now, these legends here, they sound, you know, like they're, oh my God, you can't believe that. Well, picture this. Let's suppose an airplane flies over New Guinea in 1945, 1935, 1925. What do you think those Stone Age people are going to say? They're going to pass a tradition down. They're going to say something like, a great eagle flew over the jungle with men inside of it. Now, pass that down for 3,000 years, and what are you going to see? There's a fact. They saw something. They didn't know what it was. They couldn't call it an airplane. How in the hell would a Stone Age Aborigine use the word airplane? We see the same thing going on in the book of Revelation when John was given a vision. And he's describing these scorpions with stings in their tails, controlled by men, and the flesh melting off of people's bodies. Today, we could visualize that very simply. It's an Apache helicopter with a sting in its tail, which is, or with this laser beam, or with machine guns, and with rockets firing off of it. But you know, for hundreds of years, people reading the book of Revelation, you know, they're looking mysteriously, superstitiously at these events and at these stories, at these legends, at these stories. So the Druids and many other people throughout history have these traditions. Well, what they're talking about here is you've got superior technologies in the United States flying airplanes over Stone Age people in Indonesia or on Borneo someplace, and these people on Borneo are telling what they saw. And then, thousands of years later, we take a look at it, and my God. Now, they're actual relics. In fact, he's got some pictures in here of relics. In fact, this section in here, let's see how many there are. On page 294, there are all kinds of models of airplanes. I mean, this is absolutely perfectly describable. This object, this is called figure 26 on page 294. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 objects in here that have been dug up or brought out of tombs that are unmistakable airplanes. One of them here looks like a model airplane that I built once. This object, once thought to be a bird, was found in a tomb in Egypt in 1898. Now picture this. Here's an archaeologist in 1898. He pulls a model airplane out of a tomb. He doesn't know what he's looking at. So he bundles it up. He says, well, this must be some kind of a religious object over here. They must be worshiping this thing. Doesn't have anything to do with worship. Doesn't have anything to do with religion. It has to do with science and technology. Stuffed in a box of bird models in one of Cairo Museum storerooms, it was rediscovered in 1969, and it was found to fly perfectly as a glider, though there are indications that it may originally have possessed a propulsion mechanism at the tail. The design is highly sophisticated. Here's a gold jet from Columbia, South America. Its features are more mechanical than biological. Experts at the Aeronautical Institute of New York concur that it does not represent any known type of winged creature. It appears to be a model of an ancient jet aircraft. That's from the Aeronautical Institute of New York. They took a look at it and said, this isn't a bird. This is a jet airplane. Which is exactly right. When it was dug up out of the tombs back in the 1800s, they looked at it and said, well, this must be a bird of some kind. They didn't know. Now, of course, they're not too anxious now to put of these out on display. That's the tragedy of it. Here's the might ancient aircraft be found. Now, one is led to contemplate the intriguing possibility, however remote, of such a discovery. Could craft be of any size and surprising shapes? Well, did you notice how frequently ancient flying machines were described as shaped like an egg, or like a hat, or a sphere, or a disc in items 53, 61, 62, 74, and so on? Hell, we got flying discs today. We call them flying saucers. We've got hovercraft that hover over the water. And so, you know, when you pick up something like that in 1856 or 1898, what are you going to call it? They didn't know. Consider them in the context of what's preceded. After all, Professor W.B. Emery, who had spent most of his life digging in Egypt, did say, there's more lying under the sands than has ever been found. There's more yet to be found. You know, they haven't found everything. His conclusion is, there's more out there to be found than has been found. Then there's energy sources from sound waves generated by magnetized rods or hammering. Sanskrit books state plainly that aircraft could be driven solely by the power of sound, tunes, and rhythms. Interestingly, in modern automobile tests, an ultrasonic reactor attached to a carburetor almost doubled petrol mileage with very little exhaust gas. The simple gadget is based on a system of harmonic resonance within atomic structure of liquids. How in the hell did ancients know anything about that? Hell, we're just experimenting with it today. We haven't devised any specific technology with ultrasound. We know about it. We're working with it. Kind of like chirogenics, you know. All right, 969 of these records over here, flight. Maybe next time we'll take a look at ancient weaponry and ancient science, space travel, engineering. There's much more in the book. Remember, it's called Dead Men's Secrets by Jonathan Gray. You can get a copy from bravenewbookstore.com. Bravenewbookstore.com. The number is 512-480-2503. Once more, that's 512-480-2503. A 1 in 100 read, if I've ever seen one. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to get yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.